Welcome to We Are The Watchers.
This is episode 153. Top of the day to you, Tom.
Hello.
Hello. Sorry, I was away from the microphone. We have a baby with us. It's in a bouncer. Let's see how long we get.
I reckon she's, well, I mean, I might be tempting fate right now.
Don't but, say it.
You know.
Don't say it.
It was a very busy episode when big girl Chloe came and did the podcast.
Yeah, but she's like one.
Yeah, there's a lot going on
this
though.
This one's 9 weeks and full of grump. Anyway.
We'll be talking about a new comic.
Yeah, very new.
Which we've both read, thanks to you. Mm. Thanks for letting me borrow it. So we'll talk about that. I'll give you a bit of a Utopia update of my thoughts so far because I've watched a couple of extra episodes.
I'm going to plug another podcast.
Awesome.
Yes, fantastic. One that I've been enjoying.
Greetings, subscribers and members of the Watchersville latest newsletter. Organisers of the Hula Hooping Holiday have announced that their event will most definitely be going ahead this Sunday. The sort of beach along the north side of the lake will be closed off to accommodate all those taking part in the huge hip wiggle-off. We are being reminded to allow 15 minutes beforehand to limber up. You may remember the alarming number of participants last year who pulled something and had to be carried either home, to a physio, or the chiropractor. Yoga stations will be set up on the day and everyone is encouraged to downward dog before and after they hula hoop. Megan the trainer has spent the last 5 months building a perfect recreation of Takeshi's castle. Not only is it the greatest thing the town has ever seen, but Megan says it's also a wonderful way for her to personal train people without them getting bored of burpees, sit-ups, squats and whatever else personal trainers make you do. Not surprisingly, places are filling up fast, so hurry up or you'll miss out on running at full speed into a wall disguised as a door. Sandra No is celebrating catching up on all, according to IMDb, 365 episodes of Grey's Anatomy. Because of this enormous feat, Watchersville University has presented her with a degree in medicine. She starts her first overnight shift in emergency tomorrow. That's it for now. Stay safe and happy, all residents of Watchersville.
We've got a quiz for you, but let's crack into the news. Do you want to go first?
Sure. One that I saw only this morning and I need to know more about it very soon. There's an animated show coming next year, maybe even early 2022. Depends how long that for them to make it.
Mm.
It's called Shaq's Garage.
And it's as in
Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah.
He owns many, many cars. He has quite a fleet of vehicles.
He and Jay Leno might get on.
Sure. Well, it's an animated show about his cars becoming anthropomorphized.
And I'm glad you attempted that word and not me.
Yes, going to start talking and going on adventures and this sort of stuff. I assume Shaq is involved from time to time, maybe not all the time. But
so is it kind of like, I can't remember the name of the show, but the one where Mike Tyson plays
Mike Tyson Mysteries?
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's that
along
sort of thing.
Along that line?
They haven't said whether it's straight up kids or not.
Yeah, right.
I don't imagine this is going to be a straight up kids show.
I wouldn't think so.
Why you would get Shaq for that, I don't know.
Yeah.
But he was a Shazam back in the day. Sorry, Kazam.
Mm-hmm.
Was he? No, he was. He was the genie. There's this whole urban legend. Everyone seems to remember there was a movie with Sinbad as a genie that never happened.
It didn't happen?
There was no movie with
someone's
him.
Implanted that memory in my head as well. That's scary.
Yep. It's one of those, what do you call it? It's not the Mandela effect, where everyone believes something that never actually happened. Like everyone believes that he says, Luke, I am your father. He says, no, I am your father.
I'm sorry, my brain is just getting exploded right now. There's a lot of things that you're debunking and I don't know how to take any
of
them.
So many things. Look up the Mandela effect. It's this whole thing of shared cognitive belief in something that never occurred.
That if enough people talk about it.
Yep. It just gets accepted as fact. It's a weird thing. Anyway,
scary.
Shaq's Garage. Garage. I'll be all up in that silly animated business.
I thought you were going to say, I thought your first story was going to be about Moon Knight, Marvel's Moon Knight for Disney Plus.
I don't know how I feel about that news.
Why?
The news that Oscar Isaac might be circling it.
He's in talks, but so is David Diggs. Nick Kroll as well. Like, he's not the only person.
I maintain it needs to be Daniel Radcliffe. He was circling it for quite a while. The other one was Keanu, and it depends on how they go for it. But they need someone who can – we need someone who can play schizophrenic and not like Orphan Black in control of different personalities. This person is frayed at the edges, psychotic, bipolar switching between personalities.
Is there an element of comedy and humor in this show? Will there be?
Unintentional. It's dark. So basically it's about a guy who was a mercenary.
Yep.
He was involved in a botched job in Egypt, shot dying as the sun goes down. The moon comes out. The moon god in Egypt talks him, Khonshu, and offers him a chance to be reborn, but to serve as his avatar on Earth. So he then becomes the Moon Knight. He wears all white. He's basically Batman, but all white, psychotic. And he has multiple personalities that fulfill different roles for him. So he is... Mark Spector is the guy originally, and that's who he considers his normal baseline. Then there's, I think his name is Frenchie.
Frenchie's just talking about Greece.
Sorry, Frenchie is his assistant.
Okay.
Like he's Alfred who helps things out.
Yep.
But then in his mind he has Jake who is a hard-boiled cabbie.
Do all of these different internal characters have different costumes, different outfits?
Costumes, moustaches, The whole thing. And like it's a weird thing where he doesn't realize that his appearance has changed.
So do we know if this is animated or is this
real? No, it's live action.
That's what I thought.
It will be live action. And I imagine of all the Disney Plus shows that they've announced to do for Marvel, this will be the closest to the Netflix vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Of
yes, it seems a bit darker.
Yeah. There have been times when Moon Knight, it's a difficult one. They, with the way the world is over the last few years and everyone's much more PC, they haven't ever played him for jokes anymore. It's been a serious he needs help type thing. And there have been different iterations. As I say, he has Jake, who's the cab driver. He's the man on the street who finds out tips, hints and that sort of stuff and gets leads. There's Steven, who is a studio executive, and he's the cover story for everybody of why, you know, he's Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
So he's hanging out with socialites and all this sort of stuff. And that persona bankrolls the whole project for everybody else. Then Khonshu sometimes takes over and he is a skeleton with a bird skeleton head.
Egyptian god right there.
It is specific, like he is the moon god from Egyptian culture. Yep. And then there have been other times, there was one point, and this was a really cool storyline, which I kind of wished the show would be. Mark questions everything he's doing and whether he's actually heroic or not and suffers a pretty savage blow to the head and all his personalities fall out. So he replaces them with Spider-Man, Wolverine and Captain America.
Wow.
And changes his armament so he has web shooters, has a shield and has retractable claws in sheaths and this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's a slightly different take on the normal thing of these other personalities don't necessarily take over him.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the most in control he's ever been, and yet it was the one that upset the Avengers the most because he was stealing their shtick and all this sort of stuff.
So he's kind of periphery in the Avengers world.
Oh, yeah.
World.
He was on the Secret Avengers for a while, which was a very, very D-grade team of, you know, Hawkeye was the team leader. That gives you an idea of how far down the rung they were.
Yeah.
I don't see him playing well with others.
Yeah.
He does a bit of stuff with Doctor Strange because he's very much in that mystical realm and this sort of stuff, you know, amulets and blah, 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 blah. But, I don't know how much crossover there would be. I could, however, very much see him getting in trouble and having She-Hulk be his lawyer.
Oh, okay.
To try and get him out of hot water.
That potentially could happen because it sounds like these two shows are going to be around the same time, like, you know, produced around the same time.
Thematically, it's a pretty good storyline for a writer if they can have an episode with another character with split personality comes into the show to serve as a mirror.
Yeah, interesting. Mm. We still don't know anything else about the whole She-Hulk casting issue yet, which...
Still up in the air.
Yeah.
Their plastic surgeon doesn't want them doing any activity where balls fly at their nose. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
One piece of news that I was pretty happy to see. I was away when the Suicide Squad trailer dropped, so we didn't get to talk about how excited I was for that. But I'm really excited. And this is the first DC film I've been excited for in many, many years.
It's one that I think a lot of people watched the trailer with trepidation.
Yeah. So, a little bit, because that first Suicide Squad was pretty average.
And, like, and everyone was so excited about it.
It was a great trailer. But this is James Gunn.
Mm-hmm.
He's got great pedigree. All the people involved are very cool. The thing that got me so excited is he mentioned on Twitter over the weekend, someone was like, so obviously Harley Quinn isn't going to die. And you've got some big, you know, Idris Elba, I doubt he's going to die and this sort of stuff. And he just shot back. He's like, DC gave me carte blanche to kill whoever I want.
Mm.
This isn't in canon. This isn't continuity. It doesn't, you know, we're using characters that were played by the same actors in a film that was set in 2015, 16, whenever Suicide Squad came out. And this film is set in the 70s. And it's the same actors playing the same characters.
Okay. So just it's free for all for him.
It doesn't really tie in that much. I think we're going to see so, so many horrible deaths. Mm-hmm. The more I've watched that trailer, the more I've gone, okay, there's a couple of characters that are going to die early. There's someone, you've got to have someone on Idris's level, like a big name character die at the end heroically, you know, redemption arc, that sort of stuff. There's got to be a pathetic death of someone stepping on a landmine.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, what a waste.
And there's got to be the double cross. So there has to be someone who turns and kills someone that then in turn gets killed for their actions. But like, so many heads are going to get blown up. And we still don't know who Taika Waititi is definitely playing.
Damn it.
I think.
You saw me. I was like, I'm going to ask a question and that was it.
I'm still pretty sure it's going to be the sentient telepathic alien starfish. Have I told you about this?
I think so. I'm sure but I've let's mentioned just it. Do a quick recap there's of a, what on earth this is.
There's a giant alien starfish named Starro.
It's a good name.
And he pumps out spores of tiny little starfish and they pop on your face and take over your body. So it's Invasion of the Body Snatchers type thing.
It's a little bit like Alien as well, you know.
Yes, a little bit face hugger. But it doesn't intend to kill you. It just subsumes your personality and your desires and this sort of stuff and takes over. It would be hilarious if that was voiced by Taika. Because Starro is inherently a stupid character. It's a psychic starfish from the stars.
But also like the name. Well, it's like saying I'm human from Humanville.
One thing I've loved recently, though, with Starro is that one of the spores Batman managed to catch in a jar and he's been raising it as a baby.
It's one of his own.
It's called Jarro.
That's good. I like that.
And he's become an honorary Robin.
Okay.
And refers to Batman as dad. It's hilarious.
That sounds good.
Yes. So if they get that sort of tone worked in.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes he's all about world domination and sometimes he just wants company.
And could it be a bit of both in this?
If they're having Taika voice him, I can see it just being as a desperate, lonely starfish wanting some friends. And he just picks really bad friends.
If you aren't getting your watches fixed just by listening, follow the watches on Twitter and Instagram.
We were talking about Oscar Isaac before.
Yes.
He 100% has been cast. Well, he was cast a while ago for an HBO series called Scenes of a Marriage. Mm. And this is like an adaptation of a 1970s, I think it was like a mini series by Ingmar Bergman. Not sure. Ingrid Bergman. They're no relation. The director, the bloke. And he had quite a lot of success with this. 1973 it was out. So, you know, like something we probably haven't heard about. But from what I'm getting, like he originally was going to co-star with Michelle Williams, but she's got scheduling issues. So Michelle Williams is out. Jessica Chastain is in, starring opposite Oscar Isaac. From what I'm getting the vibe of, I think it's like a Marriage Story vibe. So I think it's going to be quite heavy.
Yeah, everything about that shows is something I have no interest in. Sorry, it all sounds a bit serious.
It all sounds quite serious. As we know, parts of Europe are having to, you know, put some restrictions back in place thanks to COVID as another wave goes through. Mm. The Italian Prime Minister said that their movie theatres will be closed through to November 24th now. And basically, as you can imagine, the cinemas and theatre are not happy about that.
Mm.
But, I mean, kind of like his wording was a bit like, we're going to do it now. We're going to do it hard. And he didn't say it, but it's obvious so that in December we can start doing things that we usually do around Christmas time, like go and see movies, go and see friends and all that sort of stuff. I know that a lot of people, like their Christmas, December time, that's when they do go. If you're not a big movie goer, that is when you go and watch movies.
Yeah, Boxing Day.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. So fingers crossed that that all works for them, that, you know, gyms and, you know, all those kind of places are all being closed down again.
Yeah.
It's just what happens.
Well, look, I saw an interesting one that this is all hearsay, and of course no one will ever confirm any of this, but apparently MGM were close to selling the latest Bond, the No Time to Die.
Yep.
They were looking to potentially sell it to Netflix or one of the other big streamers for $600 million.
Holy dooly.
Which sounds ridiculous, but when you pull back, and I cross-referenced a few different articles to pull together, but that's roughly three quarters what the last Bond made at the cinema. MGM haven't got anything else. That's their franchise. They don't have anything else. And it's what's kept their lights on for the last few years. And when Bond eventually tanks, they'll be gone, which is weird because they're the only one not owned by a conglomerate or not linked to anyone. MGM's just out doing their own thing.
Yeah.
So I completely understand why they would ask such a, to us, ridiculous figure.
I can understand that too. And I can also understand why they're starting now to think about or you know, have discussions like that, because just anecdotally, I know a lot of people who are really keen for that movie.
Oh, yeah.
And they wanted to go and watch it at the movies. And after Tenet, I mean, they put it out, but it's hard to make that much money when you can only have a certain amount of people in a certain amount of theatres.
And then because of the nature of the business, they don't have a streaming service. They're not affiliated with any other streaming service because of dickhead Turner back in the day when he bought the company. He sold off the rights to any movie they made before 1986. He did that pretty much the month before VCRs started appearing in everyone's homes.
Timing.
So they don't have stuff they can sell off to the other streamers or anything like that. So they're in such a sticky position that this is the only way they were going to make any money this year was this Bond movie. And for it to be pushed so far out, they must be in a really bad spot that they would consider selling the only thing they've got at less than cost just to keep a bit of money coming in.
Look, I've got a slightly more sort of happy, upbeat story.
I'd love that.
Shang-Chi.
Yep.
Completed production here in Australia.
Oh, you good thing.
Yeah. So
they kept it quiet too.
They did. Although you knew about it.
I knew about it, but I mean, they kept the looky-loos away.
Yeah, absolutely. So we saw a few little bits of behind-the-scene photographs on Instagram of I know the director and some of the stars had been Instagramming some stuff. And that's actually how I personally found out that they'd wrap production. They were all like, thanks very much. We're done. Thanks, Australia.
Well, it's a weird thing that they can't make the noise that they normally would about being done with production, because who knows when it's going to come out.
Yeah.
Because it's going to plug into the timeline.
Yeah.
And they've got so many things that come before that that they can't just go, oh, this one's finished, we'll put this one out. I doubt that's going to work.
It's going to be interesting to see where, if there comes a point where Marvel or Disney are like, we're banking up so much, we need to have some, we need to start releasing these.
They need to get Black Widow out, because it is the true last film of the phase before, even though it's the first one of phase four, it's really the coda to the last ones or whatever. They need to get that out.
Mm.
This has been the first year that there's been no Marvel movie.
Weird, right?
So weird.
Yeah.
And I'm stoked that WandaVision is coming. I'm still gutted that Falcon and Winter Soldier got pushed back.
Yep.
And I need to see Black Widow. It's been done for so long.
Yeah.
I would drop $30 to watch that at home in an instant. So would plenty of people.
I think more people, I know more people would than Mulan.
Yeah, people would drop 50. Marvel fanboys, there's plenty of us.
But also $50, depending on where you are in the world, you can have some mates over. You all shell out $10 or something.
Yeah. It's nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing.
The only Dharma staff with the initiative to plug the hole in the island. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
I'm going to do a mashup between some news and the Tom Appreciation Thread. It's the Tom Appreciation Thread. This week is about Tom Holland, who I know we've talked about in the past. He's dreamy. He's a little dreamboat. And it blows my mind that he's like half my age or something.
He's so young.
So young. There was a photo of him for an Uncharted.
Mm.
It's actually happening. It's a thing.
It's happening. It's a thing. And also that photograph was they beautifully composed that because that looks exactly like the games.
Yeah. Was well done.
Which is what, if you're going to release a first photograph or a first shot so people can see what this movie's like,
yeah,
that's the one.
Yeah.
And it also does show that he's a lot younger than Nathan Drake in any of the games.
So much younger.
So people are still going on about the fact that if Mark Wahlberg doesn't have a moustache, they're rioting.
Fair.
I just can't see him. But I mean, he's a younger version of.
So Drake
Sully's
is
work.
That
Nolan North?
It is,
yeah.
Nolan. He's got to be in the film somewhere, right?
I really hope so, right?
They can't do my boy Nolan like that. Like, it still pisses me off that they didn't sneak him into Deadpool somewhere, because for a lot of people, in the same way that for the Joker for me is Mark Hamill, for a lot of people, Deadpool is Nolan North.
Yeah,
and Ryan Reynolds is just annoying. Yeah.
I like Nolan North. He's a nice guy.
He seems that way.
Yeah, he really does. We've got a really fun quiz coming up later, but I want to start talking about some stuff that we've been reading.
Sure, let's do it.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
So last week, I think it wasn't even in the recording. You were like, I've got a new comic I've discovered. It's really good.
Yep.
Here you go, read it. Let's talk about it next week.
Yes. So it's called Undiscovered Country. I'm going to try and summarize it briefly as best I can. Basically, one day America, without giving any warning to anybody, turns on a giant electromagnetic field, creating an actual border around the country and effectively cuts itself off from the world. No one in or out for where the story picks up. It's been 30 plus years since that happened. There is a team, basically everyone else in the world got pretty fucked over by this. Trade fell apart, all these things. They've moved on and things have come together, but now there's a global pandemic.
Yep, perfectly timed.
Isn't it just everything about this comic is so weirdly prescient? Mm. So a team between basically the Euro-Russian alliance and the African nations get sent in undercover to go and find
out
what's happening. Six or eight people.
Yeah.
Some of them are delegates and stuff like that, and then others have special skills.
Mm-hmm.
But their job is basically to go and find out what the fuck happened to America, try and get some information, and there is a rumor that there will be a cure for this pandemic within.
Which is kind of the reason for the rush on going in there.
Correct.
Like right now, it's been 30-odd years, but we go right now because we need to make sure that if there is some sort of cure or whatever in America for this pandemic, that we get it now.
And so it's an interesting enough start, but once they get inside, and then you've read the first six issues, I think there's another two or three that I've read past here.
Okay.
Once they get inside, they discover that maybe – so basically America carved herself up into states based upon ideology.
Mm.
And the first state that they find themselves in is all around, we'll say martial law, self-governance, freedom for all.
Yeah.
So it's a horrible Mad Max wasteland.
Yeah, very much Mad Max.
Yep.
Yeah.
And society's completely fallen apart there because no one's taken actual charge and no one cares about progress. It's all just self-determinism. We are then shown that America considers itself a spiral now. What was the White House now exists in the middle of the country and everything extends in there inwards. And each segmented state or whatever has pursued their own beliefs at the detriment of the others. So, again, I don't want to get into spoiler territory, but there's a very good chance that one of these places has messed with the space-time continuum.
Because within the first few pages of this comic, you're like, I don't understand what I'm seeing and the fact that it's about 30 years.
Yeah, it's
there's something weird going on, and
some areas have progressed to 100 years. Some areas are rumored that we haven't been to have rumored to progress much further along than that. I think it's going to be to do with the spiral as to where upon where the spiral is that you develop. But man, it's cool. And
there's a lot going on. And just within how many? I mean,
so there's six issues in there.
Within the six issues, they've brought up a lot of big storylines, big ideas, and enough confusion in all of them that you want to keep reading.
Yes. And look, the thing that's very interesting with it is it's written by a guy, well, two guys, one Charles Soule and Scott Snyder. Now, Scott Snyder has been in charge of Batman for many years. He's awesome. He writes big rock star comics, like big ideas, pulled apart, kick-ass action. This story he paired with Charles Soule because Charles was a lawyer for many, many years, big-time lawyer. And he thinks really meticulously about them, about stuff. And he wrote She-Hulk for a while. He wrote Daredevil. He gets put on a lot of lawyer characters because he can give it a lot of authority. Mm. The two of them have worked on this story for like 5 or 6 years, and they actually arranged to go to the CIA and spend time with different think tanks who are preparing for doomsday situations of how the world is going to fall apart.
Hmm.
So part of the idea of this is that each state had a different doomsday preparation plan put in place. And so all the stuff that sounds really far-fetched, there's supplementary material in the back of each issue where they talk about, this is the scientist that we talk to who's actually preparing the idea of what happens if we use time or light manipulation underwater. Can we age fish quicker than they actually age? Which is a crazy idea, but you can bend light, which affects the speed that it travels at. Therefore, you are messing with progress. And if you can do that underwater, then theoretically you could also cause protein to grow quicker. So
it's wild.
That's what I mean. That's just one thing. There's so many big ideas shoehorned into this story. And look, even if you don't read it, look it up, Undiscovered Country. It has one of the coolest covers you'll see.
Mm.
Took you a minute to work out what it was.
Yeah, I couldn't figure
it out.
That
I've spoken to, it's the same. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. And by that I mean it's a map and America's gone.
Yeah, and I was like, is that – but we're – so I was reading this almost like, okay, I'm looking forward to when this gets made into a TV show.
It's already been optioned. Like it was picked up before the first issue came out.
Wow.
Robert Kirkman writes the intro for the book and the foreword and that sort of stuff. The pedigree of this is very, very strong, and people were already excited before it came and snatched up quickly. And the writers are like, it's hilarious because we planned out so far ahead. We know where the story is going. We were able to sell the conclusion, and we can already get locked in on like, oh, it'll probably be 6 seasons.
Amazing.
Yep.
That's amazing.
So this has the potential to be the next Walking Dead.
Yep.
And by that I mean sprawling big story that they could plug all sorts of things into.
Yep.
Get on board. Undiscovered Country. Mm. Really good.
Yeah, it was really
good. I'm glad you wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think mainly because of the premise.
It's such a strong hook. And there's an Uncle Sam character.
Mm-hmm.
Who in comics it's this weird thing where he's kind of used as more like an avatar of he's the representation of America's strength.
Yep.
And this sort of stuff. So to see, yeah. I don't want to say too much, but
yeah. There's definitely storylines that will progress that I are tied to him and other things that I'm like, yeah, I want to know where that goes.
There's stuff that I read in that I don't think they'll pay off for 2 years, but when it lands, it should be pretty satisfying.
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
they're the real killers who turn the lights off on Tony Soprano. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Look, just along the lines of Undiscovered Country, I've watched a couple more episodes of Utopia. And you know how I said last week that it's the kind of show that you can't watch a lot of? I've now had to watch maybe one every couple of days because it's a lot and it's getting a lot.
So it's Black Mirror.
Yeah, it's very, very much like Black Mirror. And you did allude to a
shooting.
A shooting.
It happened.
Yeah, but they did change it, but it doesn't make it less shocking.
Okay. You need to have a moment like that to show just how ruthless that corporation is. They don't care. They don't give a shit.
There was another bit in the last episode I watched, and I was just like, oh, okay. Do not even start to think that this corporation is any good. Mm. So there's some really big stuff happening there, and it's
so dark.
It's so dark, and it's good, but it's so dark. I can't watch more than one episode.
Well, can I make a recommendation? Yes, please. To pull you out of the dark?
Yes.
I watched a fantastic movie that I've been excited for quite some time called Love and Monsters. Love and Monsters. It's set in the US. It's 7 years after the Nightfall, where a comet was heading to Earth, and the world leaders in all their brilliance shot up every nuke we have.
Perfect.
And it blew up the asteroid. Unfortunately, it rained down nuclear waste on the Earth and mutated every cold-blooded creature.
Mm-mm.
So moths, cockroaches, ants, lizards, frogs, crocodiles, and snakes. Yep.
Mm.
And they are awful. But do you remember that movie Warm Bodies, the romantic comedy zombie movie?
It was a great movie.
This is a romantic comedy monster movie.
Amazing. Now, as you're talking about this, I feel like this is the one that's got Michael Rooker, right?
Yes.
Yes, I know what it is. Yep. I want to watch this.
Filmed up in Queensland.
Is it really?
It really is. And there are Bruce Spence is in.
Oh, no way.
He just pops up for a very quick cameo.
He's great.
Yep. And what's his name? Dan Ewing. Another Aussie actor.
Sure.
A few Aussies spring up through there and stuff.
Sure.
But the main character is Dylan O'Brien, who was in the Maze Runner series.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been locked in a bunker for several years with other people, and everyone else is paired up. They found their soulmates, and he's so lonely. And he finds out where the girl that he just started dating before the world fell apart, he finds out that she's in another colony 84 miles away.
Time to get walking.
Now, he's never been outside. Well, he hasn't been outside since things kicked off. He's now 26 or something like that. He's been the cook for his community.
Right.
And it's about him trying to find some confidence. He has a freezing issue in that anytime anything bad happens, he just freezes up. And that becomes a real issue when he's out dealing with monsters.
Yeah, that's not fight or flight, is it?
No. But the special effects are fantastic.
Awesome.
And they're used really sparingly. Like there's some monsters that are big and flashy.
Mm-hmm.
When he first gets out, he's walking through a suburban home backyard and something moves in the pool and this giant toad jumps out. And when I say giant, I'm like three cars size.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
And it's shooting this prehensile tongue and grabbing and ripping things back into the water and stuff. And it just starts following him. and then later on, there's a snail that reminded me of Neverending Story.
Oh, really?
A friendly snail, like
yeah,
a gigantic
right.
snail, but very friendly. And then, of course, some of them are horrible and you know, very destructive frightening and this sort of stuff, but it's not ever played for scares. You're scared for him. You're not scared yourself.
Yep. I see what you mean.
It's just what I needed. It was so warm and
funny?
Lovely. Yeah.
Good.
Not ha 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 all the time, but some, you know, a couple of very wry laughs and just a good feel good kind of movie.
That's awesome because I have had my eye. Well, I had my eye on that, and then I'd forgotten that it existed. So you bringing it up again,
I can't remember. I can't remember if it got a cinema release here, but it got a video on demand drop for US iTunes. So I snatched that up and grabbed that.
Mm, okay, put it on my list of things to watch this week. Then anything else?
Oh, so many more things. But like, I want to talk about a podcast that I've been enjoying. I mentioned this earlier. Now that I have a little friend here and I don't have the brain power to sit and watch things all the time, I've been listening to more podcasts and I've been really enjoying one called Good One. It's called Good One. And it's a podcast about jokes.
Is it from America?
It is from America. It's from Vulture.
Mm-hmm.
It's hosted by Vulture senior editor Jesse David Fox. And every episode he sits down with a different comedian to discuss one of their jokes for an hour.
Oh, my gosh.
Which if you're not into comedy, this you can stop listening to me now because you won't enjoy it. But if you're at all interested in how people put together comedy, this is the best thing you will ever hear. It's really interesting because some people treat it so light and it's like, look, I don't know where the jokes come from. They flow out. I record bits and pieces and remember. Other people, it's like, well, it's a meticulous play that I've been working on for 2 years and I'm, you know, I might change a word or slight bit of structure change each night and gauge the response and this sort of stuff. And then you've got other people that are just like, oh, look, I've got a mental condition and that's how I just ramble and that's how I deal with things. It's just
I didn't know I was going to say it.
Just try and be out of my body.
Yep.
And yeah, it's a whole mix of, like, you know, he's got Ron Funches and modern guys, but then there's also some of the bigger, older names. Gilbert Gottfried is in one episode, talking about the Aristocrats, which, if you've ever seen that film, hearing Gilbert Gottfried talk with a much more normal voice about the choices he making in comedy was just fascinating. So it's this oddball thing, and I find it very difficult to recommend en masse because it's a very niche thing. The episode starts with him playing the clip from their special or the TV appearance or wherever it was. The comedian has chosen it themselves.
Okay.
So sometimes it's some throwaway joke that the comedian then just uses as an opportunity to talk about their style. And then there's other people where, you know, I picked this joke because it's the first time that I started using self-deprecation, or it's, you know, this is a joke that helped me discover my story writing style.
So it's not necessarily the joke that they're most famous for.
No, it's never the joke they're famous for.
Okay.
It's not about that. It's not about dissecting what made them big. It's about what made them confident.
Mm.
And so, I don't know. This
interesting. That's a good take on that.
Yeah. And there's a couple of people that have been recurring guests and come on a couple of times. He gets along really well with John Mulaney. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of Spider-Ham. And yeah, I don't know, just intellectual comedy. Intellectual discussions about comedy are a very difficult thing to come by because the nature of funny is keep it light.
Yeah, exactly.
So hearing people get really granular,
yeah,
you know, and the host will do stuff like, so we're using the recording from the special you put out, but I've also found where you've performed the joke on screen twice before that. And this one a year before, the sentence structure is inverted on the third phrasing. Can you explain why you decided it's that sort of level?
It's almost like, you know, those docos, like behind the music kind of things where they sit down and they, you know,
and cover one song for an hour. Yeah. It's exactly that, but for comedy.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good one.
Good one. That's a good recommendation.
Thanks.
Where we're going, we don't need roads. Unless you're listening to this in your car or on a bus or, hang on, we actually really do need roads. Guys, can we get some roads?
All right, we need to talk about Borat too.
Yes.
I must say, in the beginning, I wasn't feeling it. I may have just not been in the mood, but towards the end, when I realized that COVID had made them have to change some of their storyline and embrace it, I was like, this is brilliant.
He's good on his feet. I will admit that I watched it far too tired and fell asleep. I had to go back.
Yeah, okay. Oh, no. Did she watch Borat? Maybe that's what...
Yes, I watched when I was far too tired and I fell asleep. So I gave it a second go and I enjoyed it far more.
Awesome. How did you feel about the... They claim that they weren't people in on the joke, but they definitely seemed like there were people who were in on the joke in scenes.
It's a tough one. I'm sure there were some stooges and plants and people there to help it along, but anyone on screen that he's hoodwinking, I'm sure he's hoodwinking for real. Like those guys that he went and stayed with were not in on it. How you find people that would let you a weird random foreigner stay with them for 5 days and annoy the hell out of them?
It's just bizarre. And also I can't remember what her job was, but the lady who was helping his daughter.
Oh, with the debutante thing.
Yeah, the ladies, I should say. There was just a lot. There was a lot there. He had to make it different from the last one, right? He had to, for many reasons. We've seen it before, and also it's like 12 years old, something like that.
14 years old,
holy dooly. Yeah. So you've got to make it different. And I thought that the daughter could have gone two ways. She could have been really super annoying, and it's how he used her that worked. She's not – he's a caricature now. Like he is someone that everybody still says, my wife, like that kind of thing. But her
– she has an arc. He's never written an arc for a female character in any of his films. That's the first time. And I think somehow it really lands. Her character lands. It makes – you know, she's got such a pathos because we saw where she came from and stuff. But him sharing the spotlight was weird and really good. I enjoyed it.
To the point where there were large chunks where it wasn't about him.
Yep. Well, it can't be. that, you know, the I thought it was brilliant that he had to be Borat in costume.
And the fact that they set that up, or not so much set it up, but explained it in the beginning where they showed him on the street and everyone was like, Borat, Borat, and, you know, he's having to run away. I think that was a nice little way. Yeah, yeah, I thought that was a nice little way to sort of explain this is how we're going to deal with the character now. Yeah.
So, and look, if you're considering watching it, watch it ASAP, because I can't remember the last time something so tied to an event that happens 2 weeks later came out.
Yep.
Once this election is done, a lot of the jokes in that film will lose the potency, no matter what way the election goes.
Agreed.
And you can see why they were happy to sell it off to a streamer and get it out.
There are some really great reviews and articles out there on the internet that you can read, and I read a couple of them, and there were bits in there that they kind of highlighted as stuff that was really very clever, and I went, oh, I just glossed over that bit. So that was a part where I wasn't feeling it. But,
sure,
you know, having somebody else's take on it saying, no, this bit was very clever because of this and this. And you're like, oh, you're right, I wasn't watching it in the right mood. Just the whole book that she had.
Yep.
You know, that's genius, the fact that she managed to get up on stage and explain why this book was full of lies. And these women had no idea what she was talking about at all. And I think if it was Borat doing something like that, they would have gotten very angry. They didn't get angry at her because she was so earnest, so sincere. Like, she was getting up there honestly telling this group of women this thing that she had discovered that maybe they didn't know either. Yeah. And she did a brilliant job. So Borat's on Amazon if you wanted to go and check it out.
Do it.
Quiz time. You've got to guess the law degree holding celebrity.
Wow.
This is basically who I am, but they've all done a law degree.
Oh, I thought you meant someone holding Jude Law.
No, but that would be really good.
Wouldn't it?
Maybe that'll be another thing I'll do. I don't know how I came up with this idea, but I did. Who am I?
All right.
My law school was Downing College at Cambridge University. I met Graham Chapman there and graduated in 1963. We teamed up with other guys like Eric Idle, Michael Palin, Terry Jones.
There's John Cleese.
John Cleese.
All right. I had to wait until you...
Definitely just chime in as soon as you get
okay.
in.
Yep. Okay. Good. I like that one.
Yeah.
Do we know what sort of lawyer he is?
I a don't law think...
One?
Yeah, a law one.
A law one.
A law one. You may not be able to ask me that question. You may not be able to ask that question because I don't think I've written it down. This actor went to Glasgow University and was actually president of the Law Society there. He graduated with honours in 1992 and started practising law before realising acting was way more fun, and went on to playing one of 300 Spartans.
Oh, Gerard Butler.
I didn't know he did law. I mean, I knew John Cleese did, but
sure.
Interesting. What about this one?
I thought he was a butler.
The University of Melbourne allowed this person to graduate with a Bachelor of Arts and a Bachelor of Law in 1987. They met a couple of mates who all seemed to like comedy. Have you been paying attention to what I've been saying? He's a big fan of late shows and Working Dogs.
Is it Tony Martin?
No.
Or Mick Molloy?
It's Tom Gleisner. Yeah, right. It was one of them.
It was one of them.
I actually was going to go with Rob Sitch, but then I realised he actually did medicine,
sure.
not law. So I had to swap around.
He would have the worst bedside manner.
I reckon, right?
You're fucking dying.
Okay, this is another surprising one. This singer was only studying law at the University of Pisa in Italy because that's what his parents wanted. Ended up becoming a court-appointed lawyer, but changed to performing at piano bars and getting into opera singing.
He's, Pavarotti?
No, he's blind.
Andre Rieu?
No, not Andre. It's...
Oh, the Andrea Botticelli.
Yeah, Botticelli, yeah. I reckon he could have potentially been the real-life daredevil.
Sure. Yeah.
Different talents.
What's that? Lily agrees.
Okay, good on you, Lily. I reckon you're going to get this one in a second.
All right.
This actress got her law degree at the Uni of New South Wales in 2009. 2009. She has lots of movies and might have been the last one laughing, but I don't think she was.
So it's Rebel.
Rebel Wilson. Mm. I knew that. That's one that I knew. And you, yeah.
I told you that she went to school with my cousin, yeah? I'm sure I've told this story so many times.
Well, you've told me. I don't know if you...
Yeah, she went to school with my cousin. Cool. We don't need to go in the rest. It's not for fit for air.
Last one. This guy got his law degree in 1968 from Northwestern University School of Law. He was the mayor of Cincinnati for a bit, but the best thing he did was having people chant his name as others threw chairs, shoes, and wigs at each other on stage. Very 90s, early 90s. Jerry?
Seinfeld.
Jerry Springer.
Oh, Springer. Of course, Mayor. Mm. Sorry, you said Mayor of Cincinnati and my brain flushed somehow to John from Cincinnati, which was I can't even remember. It was the guy that made Deadwood. His follow-up show.
I don't remember that at all.
Hippies at a beach.
Wasn't Cincinnati, I don't know if I'm asking the right person this, but wasn't that where the Mary Tyler Moore Show was set?
You're not asking the right person this.
I think I get a lot of those cities up there mixed up.
Sure, yeah.
Up in the middle.
Yeah.
Up the top. And that thus concludes Guess the Law Degree Holding Celebrity. Well done.
Thank you. I rest my case.
Gavel, gavel, gavel. On that note, thank you very much.
Order.